guys. Welcome back to Unleashed, and we are so glad you're with us. And if you could be here in the studio, it's like one of those weird things. We've had to restart this podcast like three times. Things keep going down. Interesting, but we're not going to let it hold us back. Anyhow, man, if you were with us last week, we had a great podcast with Mark Pay, musician, guitarist extraordinaire. He brought his guitar with him last week. Go back and watch it. I think it was called Rock in the Paradise. Wasn't that what it was called? I think it was called Rock in the Paradise.
I think so.
And if he messaged me afterwards, because the thumbnail I put up of him for the YouTube version of this, well, for the Spotify as well, it's a picture of he and Tommy Shaw. And unless you were a big Styx fan, you might not know who Tommy Shaw was, but he was their guitar player and one of their songwriters and singers and amazing, amazing musician. But anyhow, we had Mark on, and we had a blast. One of the funniest podcasts we have ever had. So go back and watch Rock in the Paradise. You're going to love it. But anyhow, we're glad you're with us. Make sure you you give us a like on wherever you go to look for podcasts, whether you're on YouTube or Spotify or wherever you get them, and leave some comments. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to unleashed.men if you want to reach out to us. We would love to be able to hear from you, what's happening in your life, any questions you might have. Also, if you wanted to be able to donate to the ministry that we have, it is a 501c3, and you can go through the on the menu on that. You can go through the donate on that. Anyhow. Man, this week is coming up on Thanksgiving. Eric, do you guys do you do a big Thanksgiving with your family, or do you kind of keep it small?
It's small to medium now, but when I was a kid, it was a big thing.
Yeah. It's different now.
It's totally different, man.
I don't know what's happened, whether just like everyone's doing their own thing anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think the political thing that's gone on now, there's so many people politically that don't see eye to eye. They're like, you know what? I don't want to have that kind of come any more between us than what's already happened.
My family, it's not an issue, though.
I know. Mine wouldn't have been either.
Yeah, everybody's patriots and good people.
Yeah. Weird stuff. But anyhow, we are so glad you're with us today. And, you know, I want to encourage some of you out there that, you know, Thanksgiving is going to be this week. And maybe you know someone who is in need that maybe can't afford to go out and have a great Thanksgiving this year. Maybe pray who that might be that God would send you their way and to be able to give them a hand. You know, maybe it's going and volunteering at some of the local, like the Christian Center here we have in Anderson. There's a lot of those all over the country. And maybe take your family and get them involved and see what it's like to be able to get plugged in and helping someone. What a great opportunity we have to do that. You know, I don't know, Eric, as you get older, and I know you're younger than me, but do you find yourself, it's not so much about yourself anymore. It really is about how can I help somebody else?
Oh, absolutely, especially working in the ministry.
Yeah. Because when you're young, it's like it's all about me, you know, kind of a deal. Mm-hmm. But the older I get, even with hunting, because we have a lot of hunters that watch this show, I still love being able to get out and take an animal. I love the story. I love the adventure. But there's something about when you can see, you know, a young person get out there and come alive. They're not sitting around gaming. They're not sitting on their phone. They get to actually see what's happening, you know, in nature. And honestly, that's probably where I feel closest to God. That's where because I see everything that there is. I see everything coming to life at first light. And you know that there is a creator that made all of this stuff. You don't just find that sitting in your, you know, in your den or in your bedroom, you know, gaming or doing something. So anyhow, let's kind of get this ball rolling today. We have a special guest with us today, Rob Spalding from the Christian Center. He is the executive director. And Rob, we're glad to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You know, as I was pulling in here, you know, Rob and I had a conversation about a month ago. And for those of you that don't know, Eric Foley, like we always say, the man who lives in the van down by the river. This is from, what was his name? From Saturday Night Live.
That would be...
that was Matt Foley.
Matt Foley. Yeah. The motivational speaker.
Yeah.
But, you know, every single week when I come in here, the office here where the podcast studio is a part of the Christian Center. And we're going to get into a little bit about that today, but we see stuff when we come in here all the time, and they do way more than I, because I'm only in here once a week. But even coming in here, I see some really crazy stuff sometimes happening out in the street from people that are broken. You know, they're trying to find a way to be able to not just survive the day, you know, but you know, so many times any of us will run to addictions and different things when we feel bad about ourselves, when our worth and value is so low that we're just trying to, you know, find a way to kind of unplug from that kind of trauma that we have in our life and try to find some glimmer of hope. You know, I used to lead missions trips up in Alaska years ago, and it was an awesome way to be able to build structures and do things to be able to help Alaska's youth, because you've got a lot of the Alaska Native population. When you think about the dark winter months that they have, things like alcoholism, drug addiction, sex abuse is off the charts up there because they have so many hours of dark in the daytime. It's just bad news. And when we would get done with these mission trips, I used to lead like some of these guys on adventures up into the mountains in Alaska. And it's awesome. I mean, it's in the summertime. We're talking July. But when I would go backpacking with these guys and we get like 5 miles up in the mountain range, like out of Crow Pass, and we'd be camped real close to a glacier. And in the middle of the night, we had the best equipment you could have. And I'd still have 2 or 3 pair of long johns on. I felt like my toes were going to freeze off. I was miserable, couldn't sleep at all. And so as I come in here to this studio every single week, and, you know, I've been doing the podcast now, I think this is episode 72. So we've been going around the clock the year, you know, through the wintertime. And I still see so many of the homeless out there on the streets, no matter what the temperature, no matter what the weather is like. And so, you know, Rob, who we've got in here today, we were sitting down here. We were talking about this a few weeks ago. And in the same way that my passion comes out when I start talking about hunting or I start talking about doing men's ministry, you know, when you get on someone's, especially their calling, when it's something they can't not talk about. And Rob, when I asked him, he just lit up and began to tell me about the people that they serve and the stories were happening. So I just said, "Ran, Rob," I said, "I want you to come on here. I want you to tell, you know, all the listeners on here the importance of getting involved in missions, especially locally, or somewhere else." What was it, Rob? We were just talking. You led missions trips to...
Yeah, I did New York City.
Wow.
From 2000 to 2016. It was like 16, 17 years. And I would lead a couple of trips a year out there, usually in the spring and then again in the fall. And I spent a lot of time out there on the streets. And I think the whole theory was you get people out there, they're attracted to the city, you show them around the city a little bit, then you just dig in and do some real ministry in Harlem and the South Bronx in particular, as we were talking earlier, one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the country. And there's just something about that that just is really just brings people alive and into that passion for that. And then you bring them back into their communities and then you kind of turn them loose to be engaged in their local communities.
And you were telling me about you were running and you ran into somebody?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. I would like to, one of the things that I love to do when I'm in a city is especially New York, is just to run different neighborhoods and things. And I had gone out and I was running over towards the Hudson. And then I decided I was trying to get back before it rained. And I was running through Midtown and I was crossing 7th Avenue and a town car pulled up. A guy steps out of the town car. I can't stop. I'm 180 pounds and I'm running hard and he steps right in front of me and I just kind of ran him down. And as he was falling, I reached and caught him by the lapels and stood him up. And it was Henry Winkler.
The Fonz
himself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So he's really a small guy, which is kind of funny. And he had big white eyes because he thought it was over. And
did he have his comb?
He did. No, not as much hair there anymore, but yeah.
Isn't it funny? Nice. Some of these guys that were bigger than life to us, really, they're not that big sometimes in real life.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, Lou Ferrigno, I ran into him at the SHOT Show one time when I was working out there, and I've got a picture of I'm standing beside him. I don't know if I can find it. If I can find it, I'll throw it in here. But his head is the size of my chest.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Yeah. But is he tall?
Yeah, he was tall. I'm 6 feet, and he was probably 6'4", I would say.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a big guy.
No idea he was that tall.
You were talking about running into somebody in New York years ago when I was on one of the music tours. Our drummer grew up in New York City, and he was telling us a story. He was running just like you were, and he came around the corner, and there was an Italian restaurant, and he knocked some guy down. He ran right into him, and instantly, he said, I was surrounded by about 4 of these massive, bruising guys. And the guy I had knocked down was John Gotti. He said, I was scared for my life. And he said, the guys picked me up and held me. And John came walking over and he goes, hey, kid. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm just doing my run, Mr. Gotti. I'm so sorry. He goes, I like seeing a young guy stay in shape. Keep it up. Yeah, that would have been a little.
Then he checks
scary.
Himself for bullet holes.
Right?
And, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Anyhow. But we want to get into and talking about missions today. And Rob, when he was talking, you know, Eric works here too. He's the, what is your actual title here? Director of Operations? Would that be right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
What all are your responsibilities here? The people know you from being on the podcast, but
I mean, the short version is I just help keep all the trains running on time.
Yeah, that's so, literally the definition of is, you know, just keep the trains running on time.
All you know, facilities, maintenance, compliance, part of the staff, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's a lot of work.
Yep.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking, I don't know why it made me think of this. We were talking about Thanksgiving and we were in the movies that we would watch at Thanksgiving time. When I was a kid, we would always pull out these holiday movies, classics, like Willy Wonka was one of them. And we just mentioned, I'm sorry, this is kind of off the topic, but with Thanksgiving coming, we always would get ready for Christmas. And when I was a kid, it was Rudolph. I sound like Rudolph today because I've had a cold all week. Right. But it was the Polar Express. So a train made me think about the Polar Express. Remember that?
Yeah. Is that with Tom Hanks?
With Tom Hanks.
Never seen it. But
actually, it was a really great movie.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, really, really good. It's worth watching.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's all right.
Just not a fan, yeah.
You know what movie I did go see this week, which was glad to see the sequel was better than I hoped it would be, and that was Gladiator 2.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've heard some things.
Oh, one of my favorite lines, what we do in life echoes in the halls of eternity.
Yep.
And this one, you know, there was something. If you haven't seen it yet, it's awesome. Yeah, I would recommend go seeing it. It lived up to the expectation of a good sequel.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of sequels. Godfather 2, though, was amazing. But then they went and put Denzel in this. So,
posted on I made a post about this, and someone said, what's up with him not having an accent, like in the movie?
Mm.
But you have to watch the movie. It won't bother you once you kind of get going in the movie, because I kind of wondered how that was going to work, too.
Mm.
Yes, how can you have all these different actors, but no one's got this accent that, you know, anyhow.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's, you know, and again, the reason I'm saying with Rob, you know, with his passion for this, when I saw Gladiator, it was his, what was that, 2000 it came out.
Yeah, something like that.
And in 2000, I read the book Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. And you connect those things together in my life, and the impact that it had pushed me into men's ministry in ways that I never really had felt before. And that's what put me on fire to do battle for the hearts of men.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing.
So important this right now, in this time in our history, that is so important because there's such a push to feminize men in so many ways in our culture.
And you walk out of there going, I want to be him.
Yeah.
I don't want to compromise. One of our guests on here a few weeks ago was Don Higgins. And one of my favorite quotes Don Higgins always says is, my integrity is not for sale.
Yep.
You know, in those moments when we're called upon to make good decisions, you know, when no one is watching, that's the thing that lets you kind of know the barometer of where you're at.
Yep.
It's one thing to make a good decision when everybody's watching, right?
Yeah, and that's what integrity is, who you are when no one's watching.
You know, and so when we were talking about this, and there was nobody else in here. I mean, Eric was here, but we started talking about this, and the fire was burning in his belly, you could tell, with what he's doing here. And I think that they are very fortunate to have both you and Eric in here and doing all this stuff. But, Rob, what I want you to do, you know, this whole thing with the Gladiator, kind of weird, we're fighting for the hearts of men.
Yeah.
But with the Target thing, let me scroll down here. I was looking at the Christian Center and what the mission statement was. And I don't know if this is the mission statement, but it says the mission is offering a transformed life in Christ to the hungry, hurting, and homeless. Does that sound?
Oh, yeah. That's it. It really is. We use another tagline also. It's rebuilding lives, restoring hope in Jesus' name since 1955, which includes some other pieces there. But yeah, it's that whole restoring hope. It's helping, you know, it's second chances. You know, one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, we work primarily with men. We are the only emergency men's shelter in our county. But also we are opening a shelter for women as well. But just applying that to men, I think we understand pretty clearly the number one reason for homelessness and for all the side effects of all that is trauma. It's trauma. And everything else you see is just a symptom of that trauma. And when you spend time with somebody and you hear their story, it is so hard to judge somebody. But it's also you like become a cheerleader for them. You're like, man, I want to see you turn this around. And, you know, the statistics are often against us. But the need for giving these guys a second chance and sometimes a third and fourth chance and just the opportunity to overcome that and work through those things. And, you know, in the final analysis, you know, it's a relationship with Jesus. But it's also having wrestled with all those demons that allow, that give them the freedom that they need to move on.
Yeah. You nailed something. And I was, ever since you just started answering that, I've been sitting here thinking, you mentioned about once you've heard their story,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so many times, you know, we were at the, we went to see a Christian concert here about a week and a half ago down in Indianapolis. Can't even remember who it was now, to be honest with you. Isn't that terrible? I can't even remember who it was. But I can tell you this, it was an amazing worship concert.
Right.
And, you know, there's 15,000 people or whatever in the stands. But
about that. Isn't that crazy?
Chris Tomlin.
Okay. 18, 20,000 people show up
yeah.
to listen to a Christian artist.
I know. I mean,
who would have known?
I know. And it wasn't, you know, because all the years that I was touring in Christian music, you know, and I saw the other side of it where we were on the tour bus, we'd be backstage, you're doing the interviews, you get out there, you do the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get off and then the people are, you know, would you sign this? And you kind of get back on. And it's really not the real world. It's a different thing. You don't get a good feel for people's stories, like what you were just saying.
Right.
And I think one of the best things in the world, you know, what happened to me, and I've shared my story on here before, was, you know, hitting bottom in my own life when I had gotten away from all those things and God took me in a different direction working in men's ministry. And the beautiful thing is, and my hat's off, I mean, Chris Tomlin did an amazing job and he was personable and it was a worship service. But being able to work with men, it's real easy to judge somebody from the outside when you see them make a bad decision. But here's the thing. If you knew their story, chances are you'd understand they acted exactly how they should have acted being what their story was. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it was the healthy decision. But it's like any of us. If someone knew our story, when they see us act out in a certain way, we're acting exactly how we should be acting given our story.
Right.
And I think that's the beautiful thing. When I heard you talking about this the other day was,
yeah.
And do you have some stories that you could even share?
Well, you know, just in connection to what you just said, I was just sitting there thinking that one of the places we would go in New York is a place called Love Gospel Mission. It's there in the South Bronx. It's on the concourse, the main concourse there, which was, interestingly enough, was based upon the Champs-Élysées in Paris. But it's seen hard times. And we would go there and we would serve food out of a rolling soup kitchen. It's an organization called New York City Relief or the Relief Bus, and we would serve food. And my fifth, sixth time I was there, I was always see the same guy, and he was so prototypical, kind of the homeless guy that you see in every Hallmark movie or whatever. And he's this long gray beard and, you know, matted hair, and he's wearing everything he owns. And every time I was there, I'd be serving food out there, and I would always watch this guy. For some reason, he would always draw my attention. And so probably fifth, sixth time I was there, I got out, and I just went over and sat down next to him, and I introduced myself. I said, man, I see you. You know, every time I'm here, every time I'm in the South Bronx, I see you. And he turns to me, and he goes, I see you too. I mean, they're paying attention to the people who keep coming back because they have a greater impact.
Yeah,
by always coming back and building those relationships. And though this was the first time I'd spoken to him, we had sort of an unspoken relationship because we saw each other, you know. And so I said, well, you know, what's it like? What was it like? You know, he said, I've always lived in the South Bronx. I grew up here, and he's telling me his story: alcoholic mother, alcoholic father, living in a small apartment. He watched his mother being beaten, his sisters violated, all the children were beaten. This horrible thing, and as his story's unfolding and he's telling me this, I remember I got up and I was walking away and I was walking back to the bus and I was just kind of emotional. And I was thinking at the time, well, of course he's homeless. Of course he's broken. I mean, with a history like that, he didn't have any other options, really. I mean, some people can work through that and be okay, but for the most part, that stays around forever until it's wrestled to the ground. And it still affects every choice that's made their entire life. So of course this guy was homeless. And that was one of the most important lessons that I had to learn and really kind of witness that was because the brokenness was so profound. And yet he just took it like, yeah, this is what happens when you grow up like that. And I just relate that to everybody that I interact with because we're all broken on some level. Some are just broken differently and broken much worse. And I think that's important to know, to understand when you're engaging people. So,
you know, I do a lot of coaching with people. I've been a coach for many, many years. And something that I've learned is like when someone is really broken, when someone is really, really hurting like that, I have to be very careful to not, and I don't know how to say this in a way that, let me see if I can try to say it. I'm just going to say it, and then we'll kind of fish it out, is you can't need something from the person you're trying to serve.
Right.
Because if you're needing something from them, if you're needing them to talk to you a certain way or act a certain way or be really thankful or whatever it is, then you have to really check your own motives of why you're doing something.
Right.
Because what you just said speaks volumes. He saw you keep coming back.
Right.
And they're watching.
They are watching.
Yeah.
And it matters. It really does matter.
What about
a lot of people get engaged in missions like that. And I have nothing against people who want to one time try it out or, you know, I'm only going to serve on Thanksgiving or whatever. I have no problem at all with that. But the people that keep engaging and keep engaging, they build relationships whether they're spoken or not. And they're building trust whether it's spoken or not. And as a result, it's, you know, before you're ever going to affect someone's life and tell them about Jesus, you've got to build trust. They have to have a reason to want to hear what you have to say and to believe what you have to say. And I think that's a really important part of that.
We were talking the other day about love, and I said, you know what? You cannot love someone until there is trust.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, well, I love you. I'm talking about that kind of love that goes deep. Even in a marriage relationship, when you think about it, I was working with someone recently, and they were talking about, you know, trust being broken in the marriage. And I said, you know, it's really difficult to extend that love to someone when trust has been broken. You know, it's like trust is like a bank account. It's like when someone does a major withdrawal, you know, when you just shared that story, all those different things, think about how many withdrawals from his life those things caused.
Right.
And it takes a lot of deposits to get back to where things were. And it may never get back you know, to where it was. But even just being able to build the littlest bit of trust and to see someone move forward. You know, that love that we have, like I said, as long as I'm needing something, I can't love someone well. I used to talk about this thing, it was called love more, need less, because that's really the way we're supposed to do it.
Right.
You know, Jesus was able to love more, need nothing, but we are human. I get that.
Right.
Let me ask you a question. I was thinking about this when we were going to be doing the podcast. I knew it was coming up, and I was down on the other side of Anderson off Scatterfield going toward the highway down there. And any of you that live near here, you know where I'm going to maybe talking about. You know, we have a lot of people that will be out on the street corners with their signs, you know, homeless or veteran or, you know, I need help, you know, food, money, whatever. You never know. I mean, it's like, how do I know whether to be offering something? You know, do I just give them a bottle of water?
Right.
Stacy, the other day, she was at Kroger, and she wouldn't have told you this, but I will because it's just an example. You don't know what to do. She said, I saw this man, and she goes, I could tell. I'm pretty sure he was homeless. I mean, I could really tell. And he said he just needed some food. So she went in and got him a box of fried chicken, and he came out, and he was gone.
Hmm.
And she said, you know, I brought the food home to you, she said, but I just never know what to do.
Right.
How do you, I mean, how do you know?
You know, this is a real tricky area because everybody's, it's that whole thing where you do what you believe is right and then you let God sort out the rest of it. You know, you do what in your heart, what God's placed in your heart to do. What we discovered is, there's a lot of that out by the interstate and things like that. What they discovered, that's basically a business that people run. They're rarely actually homeless, and they're often rarely veterans. And, I mean, I hate to say that because that sounds very very negative towards the whole thing because there are people, you know, who are in those positions. But considering, you know, when you watch them and you watch their patterns and then, you know, you recognize somebody in a hotel coming out of a hotel room or whatever. We had a very similar situation. I saw a guy just said, I'm hungry. I just need food. And I drove around to there was a McDonald's a quarter of a mile away, got him a burger and fries and a bottle of water. And I brought it back to him. And he just said, I don't want that. He said, I want money. And then he said, I'll be eating better than you tonight. Yeah. So a lot of times I hate to make people too negative towards that. I mean, the guy that shuffles up to you in front of McDonald's and wants a dollar for a hamburger probably needs a dollar for a hamburger, you know, and that's a little bit easier to treat because there's so many of these that are just easy. They're just like any other kind of scam that are run on people. So you've got to use a lot of discernment in that. And, you know,
do you remember Larry Crenshaw?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. He was a good friend.
Yeah. Might as well.
Yeah. And I remember one time we were just sitting around kind of chatting, and I asked that question. I said, how many of these are really legit? And, you know, police officers who've seen everything out there, and thank you guys for your service, but they sometimes can become jaded because they see a lot of that stuff happening, where some of it's real, some of it isn't.
Yes.
And he said there was one guy, and we followed him. after he was done, and it was out near the Walmart out here. And there was a place where they had parked, went back and gotten his Jag.
Yeah, it's not. You know, the average, when you look at the national averages of people who just stand at these intersections, they make, you know, usually between $35,000 and $40,000 a year, tax-free. They work 5-6 hour days on average. And they'll move from place to place, but often they'll just stay in a local hotel with 3 or 4 other people, and they'll just work that town until the police get tired of it. And yeah, it's unfortunate because there are people with a lot of staggering needs, which is the reason why we encourage people to, you know, give to organizations that you know are doing a good job of taking care of people. And I think it's really important. You know your donation. You know, for us, for example, I mean, we have audits, we have internal controls, we have a board of directors, and we're very mindful about the way money is spent, the way it's used, the way it's collected, the way it's everything else. And when you see that, you know, and you're just kind of handing a guy. I gave a pregnant woman. I felt so bad. I just felt so compelled to give her money, and I U-turned and I went back and gave her money. And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I just ran right by you." And it just turns out I saw her later at a restaurant. She wasn't pregnant. You know, so maybe those are things that shade us towards people that are truly in need.
Yeah.
And so we've got to be careful. We've got to use discernment in that. And that's why I just encourage people to, you know, connect with an organization, even if it's not donating money, donate your talents, donate your time, you know, donate food, donate.
And you would hope maybe that somehow, because what you did was out of a pure heart.
Sure.
That somehow down the road, she's going to remember that.
Yeah.
You know,
I think God blesses the giver. I think you giving out of a good place. I don't think that you are cheated out of a blessing that way. But the person who receives it, maybe not.
You know, back in the day when I was still in music, we were in Nashville, and I was with a group called One, and we were recording like our second or third album, whatever it was. And it had gotten dark out. I think it was in the wintertime. It was cold, mm-hmm. And I went to a McDonald's. And I got 2 Filet-O-Fish sandwiches and some fries and a large Coke, whatever, because we were going to be in the studio late that night. And we had one song that wasn't, we didn't have a 10th song yet. It had 10 songs. We had 9. Weren't sure what we were going to do yet. We didn't have anything. We thought, well, we're just going to have to come back to Nashville and record it. And I went to McDonald's, came back and parked in the parking lot. And it was kind of tight between the car that I was in and the vehicle next to me. And when I got out, this guy, he's like right up in my face, mm-hmm. and I had nowhere to go because my door's open and I'm between that and the car and him, mm. and he's got me trapped and pinned in there. And he looks at me, and I was kind of startled at first, like, okay, what's going to go down here? And he said, hey, he said, I'm sorry to scare you. He said, I'm not a robber. He said, I'm not going to do anything. He says, I just haven't eaten in a couple of days. Mm. And he said, I just wondered if you have, because I don't want your money. I just wondered if you have any food to spare.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? Come up with me. I went up under the steps of the studio, and there was a security guard outside. And they said, well, he can't come in. You know, they'd seen him before, whatever. And so I went inside, and I heated it up in the microwave, and I gave him my fries, and I gave him my Coke, and I gave him one of the sandwiches, and I came back out. And I just sat with him for a moment, and, you know, it was basically, you know, it's one of those things where you want to witness to someone, but you're not trying to witness to somebody, like
sure.
making it sound churchy and everything. But I said, man, I'm so sorry that you're in this situation, and prayed for him, you know, and that kind of a thing. Because I didn't live there. I was going to be leaving,
right.
So I couldn't really do anything locally to help. Went back in the studio, and I think it was Phil Johnson was producing the album, and I told him what had just happened. And the other guys, they were on a break, and Phil and I went out to the piano, and we sat down and just started playing. And this is one of those songs that came out instantly.
Oh, yeah.
Like you knew it was God. And the verse, it was only one verse, and it said this: Lord, you chose me to carry you through a world that's hungry and thirsting for you. But I fall so short of taking your place, so I need your touch to show them your face. And then the chorus says, it's your touch that I need in my life. It's your mark I want to leave behind. It's your face that I want to show them. It's your touch that I need in my life. We recorded it that night, and it went on the album. But I say that God, like that pregnant woman, will put people in our path, and we have no idea what's going to come out of a situation.
Right. And correspondingly, I'm on a subway in New York, and a pregnant lady gets on, and she said, "Look, I don't know any of you people, but I am pregnant and I am hungry. I don't want your money, but if you have anything to eat, I would appreciate it. And it was the most humbling moment, because for me, I'm starting to get a little jaded towards that whole thing.
Yeah.
And she was very pregnant and barefoot, and she sat down. I was lucky. She sat real close to me so I could engage her a little bit. And I'm one of these people, I carry a piece of fruit in my backpack and, you know, granola bar or protein bar,
right,
or something like this. And, you know, my whole group, they're all looking at me and watching to see what to do. And I just kind of, and I'm just started handing her food and everything. And my whole group, and then she, it was a decent ride. I mean, it was a long ride, but she's sharing her story, and it gives us a chance to share our faith. I mean, it was just the perfect opportunity. So if you go into it not trusting any of that, then you also have the possibility of cheating yourself out of a great blessing and an yeah, opportunity to really learn something.
Well, when we sat down, you were telling me some things about, you know, back during COVID and all that kind of stuff. And before we finish up today, I wanted to go back, because some of the stuff that you talked about to me when I was sitting here, some of the numbers were staggering about how God showed up.
Sure.
Man, would you share just some of that?
Yeah. I've got one other story I want to tell you really quick. And this would have been about 3 or 4 years before that. It would have been 2016, 2017. And it was a time where the organization had been in a lot of trouble, and Eric and I were kind of new on staff, and we were really turning this thing around. But sometimes you'd run out of food. And we were standing in the kitchen, and the kitchen manager at the time was in there. And they're like, man, we don't know what we're going to serve for dinner. It's about 3 o'clock. We don't know what we're going to serve for dinner. And you say, let's just pray. We're going to figure this out. We're just going to pray. But first thing, let's pray. And then we'll figure it out. So we're praying, over the whole situation and the whole circumstance. And we get done praying. And I'm not kidding. There's a rap at the door. And we're standing in the dining room itself. There's a rap at the door. And one of the staff walks over and opens the door. And this kid walks in and goes, is this a Christian center? Yeah. Well, these are for you guys, and had a stack of pizzas. And then a girl behind him had a stack of pizza, and the girl behind her had a stack of pizzas. So while we were praying, God had people baking pizzas.
Wow.
And it was one of the most profound things that have ever happened to me. And it's funny. It's a connection point. That kitchen manager, no longer a part of our team, but what I would run into him, and he would bring that up, that circumstance up, because it was such proof that God, you know, before we were praying, God was making pizzas. And I just thought that was really profound. But when the pandemic hit, this would have been 15th, something like that, of March of 2020, is when it really hit hard here. And everything just shut down, as you know. Everything just began shutting down. And what happened, what we saw, that all the local food pantries shut down. They didn't know what they're dealing with. A lot of them had older volunteers, so they just all closed. And many of them had signs in their windows that said, close till further notice, go to the Christian Center. We have no idea. We have no idea about what's about to hit. And the next thing we know, I mean, literally within a day, we had people lining the block around us. And, you know, we serve hot, nutritious meals 3 times a day. And so it's lunchtime, and we're like, well, the lunchtime crowd's big. Well, then it's massive. And in that 9.5 months from that time, the middle of March until the end of the year, which would be 9.5 months, we served 151,000 meals.
Wow.
And the community, we had
Holy
people.
Cow.
Yeah, we had people in our community that stepped forward and said, hey, we've got, there are shut-ins and people that are sick, can't get out. We want to deliver those. And they did for almost 12 weeks. You know, we were just delivering meals all over the county. And, you know, the sheriff is a good friend of ours. And, you know, he said, I'll have my guys, when they're running to this part of the county, just take meals with them that they can drop off. And I mean, it was such a community movement. And we did because the pantry's closed, we just got on the phone and we called Second Harvest and Midwest and all these different food banks. We said, just whatever you can send us, whatever we can get. And we did about 1 million pounds of food.
Wow.
Over that time as well. And, you know, we're the safety net. We're just the community safety net. And I think that's really, really important. And, you know, we don't ever close. And so it's just easy to say, you know, whatever the crisis is, just go to the Christian Center. And that's kind of how we responded to that. I mean, we continue to give out. We give out about 44,000 articles of clothing a year and hygiene products and some other things. So it's just really important. And it was tested in the middle of crisis. And then not long after that, the community, the emergency preparedness folks kind of called us in and they said, hey, we want you guys wouldn't know if you guys would manage like inventories and things like that if there was a big community emergency, because they saw us in action and how effective we were. So, that's
powerful.
Yeah, it's big stuff. When you consider that's about double what we would serve in that time normally.
I hope you guys are listening to this can hear the importance of just showing up. You know, maybe God has been moving you to give financially. Maybe he's been moving you to give food. You don't know where. I was talking with a guy this week, and he's been saying to me for weeks, you know, God's saying, you know, feed my children, but he doesn't know what that means. Mm. You know, what does that even look like? I think so many times, if we really pay attention to what God is doing, he will put those things in front of us, like those breadcrumbs. And like you said, it's not to judge the person that's there. It's asking for the money. Is this right. legit? Is it not?
Right.
It's my heart. If I feel God is moving me to do something, then I do it.
Yeah.
It's that obedience thing.
And I think a lot of it is, it's also just by being obedient and just by showing up, like you said. You know, I was in, we were doing a little collaborative thing with a church group that was in New York at the same time we were, not affiliated with us. But what they wanted was, our group was kind of older, a little bit older people. We were in our 40s and stuff. And these were mostly college kids, most of them 18, 19, 20 years old. And they said, hey, why don't we do this together so that you guys can kind of, your guys, by then we'd done quite a few of these trips. You guys go along with the kids and help them out. And it was a Christian college. And, you know, the kids were so ready to tell these homeless people about Jesus. And I just remember this, that there were some guys, there was a right around from where Trump, Fifth Avenue, and then right almost behind Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue, is a place called Sony Plaza. I don't even know if it's still there or not, 10, 12 years ago. And this is where the homeless people would hang out there at night. So we ended up there, and this young girl, and she was great, but she was really sweet, but she walked up and she said, had a bag of food, and she said, hey, are you hungry? And the guy goes, yeah. And she goes, she's holding the food out, and then she goes, oh, wait, I want to tell you about Jesus first. And the guy went, ah, never mind. And I thought, oh, that's an opportunity lost. Anyway, this group of guys worked their way inside of Sony Plaza, and they were sitting at a table. And I went in, I went over to them, and I said, "Is everybody get something to eat?" And I had two bags of food with me, and one guy hadn't. And so he gave him the bag of food, and one of the guys there, you could tell he was kind of the leader. He takes his foot, it's a round table, he takes his foot, and he pushes out the chair in front of me. He goes, have a seat. And so I sat down with them at this table, and, you know, we started talking about, so why are you in New York, and why are you from here? No, I'm from here. I'm from Indiana. And began telling this story, and, you know, oh, I bet you love the 500. Well, I've been a time or two, but
right.
Not necessarily motor car. But as we get talking, he says, now tell me why you're here. Why are you here? And I said, man, we just want to work with the folks on the street. This is an opportunity for me to meet you and interact with you. And he said, are you going to eat? And I said, and I mean, they were waiting for me. So I'm opening the bag of food and we're just sitting there eating. We're just five guys at a table being five guys.
Right.
You know, just being dudes. And we get talking about this and there. And then they start asking questions about, well, so you're here with your church and, well, tell us about that. And why would coming to New York be an important part of who you are as a Christian? And then they start talking about their faith journeys and all this stuff. And I thought, you know, that's a little more time consuming, you know? I'm here because Jesus called me to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here at the table with you because Jesus put us here on purpose.
Yep.
And it's an opportunity that we forget about. It's like, you know, the mechanics of it is, I have food, so I'm going to trade you food for you giving me a minute to tell you about Jesus. And it's so much more relational than that.
You know, when I was working on probably the last two books, I would go to Panera, that's where I used to write, and people would keep coming up and interrupting me.
Yeah.
And I would get so irritated. I'm like, I can't write here anymore. My wife would be like, well, go someplace new. And then God said, Brent, these are divine appointments.
Yeah. It's an opportunity.
Because when my heart has changed, the way that I write is different. It's the same thing. When I give, like even that, even if I wouldn't have said to somebody, hey, I want to tell you about Jesus, but and then I'll give you the food. No, I'm just going to give you the food because that's what, that's what God would do for any of us.
Right.
He gave us his son.
Right.
So I don't. Because many times they can smell if there's an agenda. And, you know, what is it? Romans 14:4, if there's corrections to be made or manners to be learned, God can handle that without your help. And I think so many times we think it's our job to save the world. No, that's Jesus.
Right.
God did it through his son.
Yeah.
And that simple act of love, loving someone unconditionally, now opens up those beautiful conversations.
Right.
And I was thinking about this when you were talking about, you know, when I gave to that pregnant woman, whatever, it was like, I got the blessing. Well, I think so many times we forget about this. And this is really important. And I want to kind of wrap it up with this. When you think about giving, whether it's this holiday season or whenever, I've had people come up and put bags of groceries on my porch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they would just anonymously show up, and I'd come back out, and there'd be like two bags of groceries sitting on my porch, and I never found out who it was.
Nice.
And there have been times when I've been in line at the grocery store and didn't have enough, when someone would say, I got this. Or you're at the drive-thru, and someone gets that, you know, that order for you.
That's pretty great, yeah.
But here's what I kind of want to leave you with when you think about this. When you give this holiday season, whether it's giving words of life, whether it's helping someone physically, whether it's putting food on the table, giving them shelter, whatever it is, we talked about this a little bit ago. You can't have an agenda. You know, what am I getting out of this? But when you can freely give because you knew that God freely has given to you, one of the most beautiful things that we receive is, you know, I was thinking about that woman, you know, with what she might be experiencing, knowing she could try to con somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not going to have the fruit of the Spirit.
Right.
She's not going to have that love, peace, patience, kindness, all that kind of stuff that we get, the joy that we get. But the person who gives with a clean heart, because God moved you to give, that obedience, knowing that we are obedient to our Heavenly Father and that we don't know whether there's a need or not, but God said, I want you to do this. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The cleanness, if I can say it that way, that I feel, the cleanliness that I feel inside. You know, when Jesus is talking about, you know, we want to shine up the outside of the cup, you know, but inside it's so dirty.
Mm.
When we can get to the place where we don't need to go tell somebody, but we can actually move towards someone and give, one of the greatest gifts we ever get is we get that peace, we get that joy, that blessing that we get from serving others. So, Rob, as we kind of wrap this up today, where can people go if they're looking to be able to give to the mission here?
Sure. Well, if somebody needs a Thanksgiving meal, and lots of people do, we're at 625 Main Street in Anderson. We have some partner organizations, one in Chesterfield that's going to be doing porch drops. So just call the city treasurer there, and they'll get you on a list. Harmony House up in Elwood, we're providing food and meals to them so that they can do it as well.
That's Elwood, Indiana.
Yeah.
Because I remember the podcast is going out to like all over the place. Yeah.
Right. But we're at 625 Main in Anderson, and we're planning on serving a lot of meals from 1:30 to 3:30.
Can people volunteer?
Yeah. They need to call the office first, 765-649-4624. And
what is it again, Eric? You got it?
It's 4264.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Give that number in its entirety then so they can write it down.
765-649-4264.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that I have the QR code on the screen if they want to donate.
Yeah. Awesome.
And you could, you know, if you want to bring up food and drop it off there at 625 Main, or you want to donate, you can send a check to P.O. Box 1216 Anderson, Indiana 46015, and we'll put it all to good use.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I hope you have a wonderful holiday. And again, be asking God who he would have you move towards. Sometimes that simple word of life. And guys, we talked at the beginning of the podcast about going to see the movie Gladiator. And I'm going, what does that have to do with this? It's that one line from the very first Gladiator that we saw. It says, what we do in life echoes in eternity. Mm-hmm. And something that I end so many podcasts with is when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous. Dangerous for good because he's been unleashed. And there is nothing more dangerous than to see a good man show up, not be thinking about himself anymore, be thinking about how can I bless others. And you give where God has called you to give, and I guarantee you, he will show up and he will meet that need. Anyhow, we are so glad you're with us, and have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Appreciate it.